Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With your past, I think you have a unique ability to connect with these kids. Or not. In which case, no biggie, we'll move on.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 380 for the week of November 8, 8:30 in Newfoundland. I am Twitch outing David T. Cole, and I'm here with Tall Sarah, Sarah D. Bunting.
You'll really enjoy her.
Nerd zookeeper Tara Ariano.
No, don't feed them people food.
And sparsely stocked school library Daniel McEachern.
I'm sorry, somebody has already signed out the science book.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. We are recording right on time and everything's going just as expected. You will tell that in our voices. First piece of site business before we get into it. Welcome back to Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for having me back. Thank you, everyone who sent nice messages about my mom, who died a couple weeks ago. Thank you so much to everybody who filled in for me around here. And thanks for keeping my seat warm. I'm glad to be back.
We also welcome Danny McEachern. Hi, Danny.
Hello, Danny.
Hi, everybody.
Yay! Before we get to our lead topic, some listeners let us know they needed closure on that poo terrorist anecdote when we were talking about LA Law last week. We did include it in the show notes, the link to the story that I was quoting. But in case people didn't read it, I just want to pay that off because I did do it in our original taping and then Dave cut it. So here's what happened with regard to the poo terrorist. Stephen Bochco, who has since died.
We miss him.
He wrote this in his autobiography, Truth is a Total Defense. He fired Daniel Benzali, who was also a guest star in that episode of LA Law we talked about last week. Fired him for Murder One because he was consistently late to set in the morning, and now I'm reading. Bochco wrote, "When he arrived, I said, Daniel, you're an hour late for work every day, and it's hurting us. What can I do to help you with this problem? Daniel said to me, I don't know what to tell you. I live in Malibu. I get up, I have my coffee, and then I have to wait until I have my morning dump. Unbelievable. I suggested the following. Get up, have your coffee, and come to work, then have your morning dump. Daniel said he couldn't, that once he'd had his coffee, the drive was too long for him to hold his dump in. Despite efforts to come to a compromise, Benzali said, I can only go to the bathroom in my own toilet at home. As a result of the bathroom blues, Bochco fired Benzali in 1996 from the show where he played attorney Ted Hoffman and was nominated for a Golden Globe for his performance, so it's no, they once had to stop down production on Mr. Belvedere because Christopher Hewitt sat on his own balls, but it's pretty good as a showbiz story.
Can I just say how glad I am that I was here for this?
And Team Benzali, sorry.
Great Daniel stories in pop culture.
Also, may I suggest travel, then coffee, and then acting or dumping on set or whatever.
Or don't live in Malibu or get up earlier, yeah. You lazy git. Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying, if you got problems, you got issues with morning dumps, don't fill up with coffee before you have to get in the car. That's just bad news.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Daniel Benzali's bowels. We are here to talk about the new head of the class on HBO Max. And in the sequel to the original ABC sitcom, which ran from 1986 to 1991, Alicia Gomez, played by Isabella Gomez from One Day at a Time, starts her very first teaching job running one elective debate class for a bunch of overachieving nerds. It turns out she has a personal story to explain why she is so focused on trying to get her students to take risks and not be so afraid of risking their future college admissions, but maybe they will also end up teaching her a thing or two. That's basically it. Let's do the Chen check-in. Danny, should our listeners watch the new head of the class?
No, I yield the rest of my time.
Great. Sarah?
Nope.
Dave?
It is no Save by the Bell. Nope.
No, it is not. And that leads nicely into my first question. So when we were starting the show, Dave asked if it was like the new Saved by the Bell in format, meaning characters from the original series appear, which they do. Robin Givens is in the second episode as Darlene, who is now the overbearing mother of Terrell, one of the new kids. But I said my impression was that the show was less knowing than Saved by the Bell and more for teenagers. But Danny, you have a teenager. Does your response to that align with Marge Simpson's prospective wishbone necklace customer, to wit, I doubt my son or daughter is that stupid?
My daughter is not that stupid. She left halfway through the first episode that we watched.
Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
It's not for me and it's not for me. So I thought maybe it would settle down in the second episode. I wanted to see when Robin Givens showed up, etc. And also people's footwear is really red in this show. So like, it's not like there was nothing for me to look at.
Right.
There are members of the company who are way, way overselling and over-indicating. Isabella Gomez got way better on One Day at a Time over the course of that show. But
yeah,
this just seems like a total regression for her to a bunch of tics.
Yeah.
It's like it's very retro, but not in a good way, I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of cast members that are doing some interesting things, like the kid who plays Miles, Adrian Matthew Escalona, has a like very fluid face, and they're putting him in hilarious sweatshirts, and he's pretty good, I think. But it's not enough, and it just doesn't seem... It like does all the things that a sort of sitcom of the original Head of the Class era would do, but it's not like inverting any tropes or doing anything knowing with them. And it just is like exhausting and kind of noisy to look at. And I just am, you know, I tried, but I'm done.
Really bright.
Yeah. Very, very Disney Channel, like iCarly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. To me, this is taking an 80s show and turning it into a Nick or Disney XD show. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of hoping for more of like, as Sarah said, like a winky, knowing take on updating this 80s two levels away from classic TV show.
Right.
But it doesn't. It's just like kind of a tween show at the end of it, but just also not a very good tween show either. Like a lot of the writing is, you can tell, elder millennials really trying hard to pack in all the stuff they think kids are doing right now or saying or whatever, and missing the mark by about 18 months at least.
For sure.
For some of this stuff, you know, and it's really kind of cringy in that, you know, in that way when adults try to be fellow kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that here. I don't think anybody in your audience, unless they have kids that are not picky, are really going to go for this.
Yeah. Danny, you watched one more than the rest of us did, it sounds like. Were there any other...
Did it get really, really good in episode three, Dan?
It got really gritty. I'm not sure. I don't know if this is actually aimed at teens, tweens, because I think like my daughter's in high school now, and she and all her friends, they watch stuff like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Office, shows that are more modern than what this is. I sort of wonder if this show is more aimed at moms my age. And I say moms specifically because in the first three episodes, all the parents that are either seen or referenced are moms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no dads. And I'm not saying that as a criticism in terms of, oh, I need to see a father figure in that. I think this is a show for people who want to be overbearing to their children, but still have their children be high achieving, relatively well-adjusted students who have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What you're saying is if you enjoyed Why the Last Man, you'll enjoy Head of the Class.
It's a reboot of Head of the Class, but what is AP Bio if not a reboot of Head of the Class filtered through like 3.5 decades of television comedy now, right?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do something that breaks the fourth wall, like Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
And what is Head of the Class, but just an inverted reboot of Welcome Back, Kotter with kids instead of delinquents.
You know?
Tara texted me in the lead up to this to ask me if I'd watch the original Head of the Class. And I said, yeah, of course I did. It was on.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old. I didn't have a driver's license. I had three channels.
Yeah.
You just watched what was on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have so many more choices now. And I'm not going back to the shows that look like this with the sets where it looks a school that nobody has, you know, set foot on before they started filming. Mm-hmm. But I mentioned the library up in the intro. Shawshank Prison had more books than this library does.
Also, who in the administration is advertising coffee cart Mondays and thinks that apostrophes pluralize things? They don't. You're a school. Fucking
Thank
do
you.
Better.
Yeah.
We watched the original pilot, and I enjoyed that more than watching this. It is also not super great.
No.
But it's better, and it's super tropey, so you can enjoy it on that level. Mm-hmm. Every character has attributes that only apply to them and them only, and they're super unique, and that's just where they are in the universe. You know, there's the nerd with the glasses, you know, they're everything like that. The shy girl who's into poetry. And
yes,
blah, blah, blah.
The big hair poetry girl.
Yeah.
There's the cool one, right?
Yeah. And,
although I will say the best thing about watching the original 80s pilot of Head of the Class was, for some reason, over the end credits, just are filming them standing and sitting in a classroom, not giving them anything to do. So they're just sort of like moving their heads a little bit and staring at each other and like almost checking the time.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is so awkward to watch these kids try to like, what do I do with my hands? Yeah. I don't know what to do with my hands. Help. It was
That's not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say the best thing about it was Howard Hessman's rat tail, which he had.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned AP Bio, and we also talked about Saved by the Bell, like both of these are on Peacock. They are much better shows about high school. And no one is probably watching them like they should because they're on Peacock instead of a streaming service everyone has, HBO Max, which is a drag. Yeah.
This program is exactly the type of program people were whining would happen when they discovered that it was going to be HBO's name on a thing that was basically Pan Warner's.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, you're going to bring down the HBO name. It's like, this is the kind of garbage shovelware show that will do just that over time, I am sure.
Yeah.
It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tar.
Highbrow, lowbrow again. My highbrow show is Frayed. We talked about Frayed as a lead topic when its first season dropped on HBO Max. This is one of the good shows on HBO Max in the summer of 2020. It's about Sammy, played by Sarah Kendall, who fled her native Australia after high school, married a guy in finance, and was living a very classy, elegant life, fake accent and all, in London when her husband scandalously died in the series premiere. She lost his entire estate, and she was forced to return to her hometown for the very first time since she left. And most of the first season was about Sammy dealing with the various people who had cause to be angry about her leaving. But then the season ends with an event that changes everything in a way that's both shocking and also, when you think back over the season, feels retrospectively inevitable. And I won't say what it is, because the first season is really good and sharp and funny. Everyone is wonderfully cast. But Kendall, who also created and wrote the show, is especially good. It's an Australian-British co-production and definitely feels part of the British tradition of comedy protagonists who are hard to like on a personal level, but make good TV. Kendall's performance as Sammy is vanity-free, and she is the butt of most jokes and ultimate victim of most of her schemes. But I think the show in general doesn't have as mean a streak as you might expect, and it really earns its sweet moments of connection between characters. And season two is, plot-wise, somewhat of a departure from season one, to the point where the first episode kind of worried me because of how different it was. But then after that, it got rolling. And I could tell it was still the same show at heart, even though the characters and setting were telling a very different kind of story. To keep it vague, the show's always been about crime, the crime that underlies the loss of Sammy's husband's estate, Chris, the councilman doing graft, the various scams of Sammy's brother's girlfriend, Bev, and so on. But the crime stories of season two have higher stakes, and they rewrite the ways the core characters relate to each other in very smart, interesting, still funny ways. It's a good show that is probably going to sink out of sight immediately because the whole season dropped at the same time. But if you liked Fleabag, give Frayed a shot. Dave, you watched it as well. What did you think?
I love the show. It's really smart. And you're hinting at, you know, sort of a dark criminal story, mystery, Coen brothers-y sort of happenings.
Yes.
But also moments of levity and genuine family emotions and relationships and feelings and all that. But it doesn't give you whiplash.
Yes.
Like, it's doing all those things and it's not vacillating super quickly between them, to the point where you're like, okay, now this is Frayed the comedy and this is Frayed the drama. It does a really good job of setting an even tone. And that is really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And I found the season two like genuinely tense.
For sure.
Like in a Coen brothers doofus burn after reading sort of stupidity sometimes.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
Highly recommend Frayed, but you do have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, you do. The joke from this second episode that made me realize, like, oh, it is still the same show, was when Chris comes by and Sammy is doing something that she doesn't want him to know about. So she tells her brother Jim to go to the door and like get rid of him. And so Jim says she's doing a poo because it's Australia. Mm-hmm. And Sammy's like, what the fuck? And then Chris is like, it's okay, I'll wait. And then he's like, no, it's been a couple of days, so it might be a three coiler. So it's like, it's not all jokes of that nature, but there are some and they're good.
Yeah.
Jim is a very good character that gets better in season two, I think, as well.
Agreed.
They give him more to do. All right, my lowbrow show, Married at First Sight. If you're listening to this episode the day it comes out, the Decision Day episode, which is when couples decide whether to stay together or get divorced, is tonight. And at the start of the season, I said that all five couples were doomed, and I stand by that. The two couples who are doing the best are Rachel and Jose, who have come back from a fight in which she accidentally called him by an ex's name, and he very calmly and reasonably locked her out of their apartment for the night. Their main issue, other than that he's extremely controlling and doesn't listen to her, is that he's cheap, which is a problem because she really loves to travel. And in the last episode, she raised this again to tell him she thought they should take a big trip, meaning somewhere that's a 9 or 10 hour plane ride away every other year. And his response was, I also love to travel. Let's go away for the weekend to San Antonio or Fredericksburg, because they live in Houston. This is not going to work. Gil and Mirla, she's a free-spending diva. He's a firefighter. She seems to want him to start making more money somehow. She also complains about everything all the time. And the only reason they are still together is that he teases and jollies her along like a parent with a fussy toddler. And that seems to have achieved equilibrium for them. And those are the successful matches. Of the other three, Zach and Michaela and Brett and Ryan are already no longer living together. Michaela has extreme anger problems. They've shown her kicking over a bench and trying, but then failing to knock over a foosball table at their couples retreat many times. And it's funny every time. And one of Brett's friends matched with Ryan on a dating app while he is still supposedly married. Finally, there's Bao and Johnny, still sharing their show-provided apartment some of the time, but they don't sleep in the same room. So this season has been such a shit show. There will be a two-part reunion starting next week. So 4 hours of reunion. I cannot wait. Great job to the psychos at Married at First Sight for bringing this show into my life.
Danny, what do you got?
One of our favorite shows is the Deutschland series, which started with Deutschland 83, which was brought to our attention by this very podcast, followed up by Deutschland 86. And if you're not familiar with the show, the number refers to the year that the series is set in. It follows a reluctant secret agent from East Germany named Martin, who is pressed into service by his lifelong spy, Aunt Lenora. I don't want to give too much away because if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. We figured out not long after Deutschland 86 came out that, wait a minute, if they go 3 years every time, then the next one is going to be Deutschland 89. And that's when the Berlin Wall fell. So that's going to be great. And we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for it to come out. It finally arrived on one of the streaming services that we have up in Canada, and we devoured it. I think I preferred the other two seasons a little bit more. The tradecraft in Deutschland 89 became much more personal because Aunt Lenora has ruined Martin's life. He's never going to be able to have a normal life. And I felt that the fall of the Berlin Wall didn't result in as much global political shenanigans. Like I said, it was much more personal. Martin wanted revenge on his aunt, and that's how the show played out. But it's still very much worth watching. And if you haven't seen it already, you should make an effort to see it. I only put one show in the doc. That's my highbrow. I'm going to quickly sneak in a lowbrow pick right now because it's another show that's just come back, and it's a show called Yellowstone.
Oh, boy.
We were just talking about this before you came on.
See that? Dan just aged 20 years when he said Yellowstone. It's like the guy from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. He's just like, ah.
Yellowstone is not a good show. Yellowstone is a show that thinks it's much better than it is.
Mm-hmm.
You could call it Cowboy Succession, although I believe the first season of Yellowstone predates Succession. Whatever. I think Kevin Costner is really good, actually. This is one of the roles that it suits him really well. This is one of the roles that he inhabits very well as the Logan Roy figure of Yellowstone. He owns this ranch, and it's about protecting his way of life in the great American West, right? But it is really quite watchable. The amount of stuff that happens in any given episode and in any given season is bananas. Like, and one of the characters in the first like 4 or 5 episodes, he kills his own brother-in-law because they're on the opposite sides of a cattle dispute. He's driving by a meth lab that explodes, and the guy who's mixing the meth is is dying and he has to put the guy out of his misery. He stumbles across a couple of dudes who have abducted a young girl. And one of them winds up falling and hitting his head and dying, and he kills the other one or something. And then he has to bury the bodies. He's trying to move a rock on his land and breaks his tractor. And then so he tries to blow up the rock with dynamite, and then he finds a dinosaur skeleton.
They're at the halfway cafe with Chris.
And this is one character on this show. So like I said, it's not good. It thinks it's a whole lot better than it is. But we're very excited to get back into it.
You know, it has a prequel coming next month as well. It's called 1883.
Prequel. No, I didn't know that.
Well, get ready, Dan, because here it comes.
Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got?
Two middlebrow reality programs. Let's begin with the Great British Baking Show / Bake Off. I first put this in the syllabus for our episode for like a month ago. And at that time, I had a whole rant backing up Chris Murphy of Vanity Fair, who had written an enough with the science project showstoppers that require scaffolding and a permit screed. Quote, yes, baking is a science, but I thought the goal of the show was to find the best amateur baker in Britain, not the best aspiring architect. Agree. Since changing networks, that aspect of the challenges has gotten a bit out of control. And it's a part of why Top Chef spinoff Just Desserts didn't work. Mostly that was because Johnny Iozzini was a wooden tryhard in addition to allegedly being crabby in the kitchen, but a big part of it was how many goddamn chocolate sculptures everyone had to do. Like, it's interesting once, but not week after week. Enough can go wrong with a meringue that's just trying to meringue. You don't need to amp the drama by insisting that the meringue also press pants or be tall enough to ride a roller coaster. Anyway, apparently the producers figured out that people were over it with the use of dowels, and showstoppers in the interim have been more focused on the actual baking, which is great. And, you know, that show has always been not soothing exactly, but one of the things that my husband, Dan, and I like about it is that the drama is in the task and not interpersonally. Mm-hmm. So I think the new network may have felt like, well, but now we need to, you know, please make, bread that looks like Elvis Presley. And it's like, this is not why anyone's here. Although if they do that as a challenge, I will not be uninterested. But then there's some interpersonal drama on Project Runway. The new season.
Other than the one person, there's been surprisingly little this season, but go ahead.
They are, now that the Meg person factor has been subtracted, thank God. Mm-hmm. I think that was the second episode. I believe as you're listening to this, there have been four.
Correct.
The fifth is airing tomorrow as you're listening to this. That was the second episode, and that was the most uncomfortable that I've been watching television in a really long time. And I watch a lot of squirmy true crime shit. And this was just like, I was sliding down on my office couch. And then I was like on the floor, sort of trying to get under the couch. It was very bad. And that was before things really ramped up. The new season overall, now that that factor is subtracted, does seem more interested in fashion and creativity versus sewing and trying to get, for instance, Red Robin.
Yum.
Thank you. Into like it, getting the sponsors into the action. The challenges aren't as contrived. Elaine Welteroth continues to be the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen. So it is charming to me that her intros, when she is called on to do it, are so awkward. Like, she is very nervous and bad at it still, but it's cute. And also, I'm just glad Karlie Kloss is gone. She added nothing. And there are a ton of interesting designer voices this year who aren't afraid to just basically put like a floral wastebasket around the shoulders of the model and be like, what? It's art. And the judges agree with that, but it just seems to be more art and less commerce this time out. And I like that so far. And I like the group of designers now that White Lady Tears has gone home.
Yeah. That was uncomfortable, but I watched it twice. It's a good season so far. And I also, like, people were earlier in the season were like, we need Tara and Sarah to weigh in on the hostless format. And it was weird at first, but then you're like, you know, we don't really need a person directing traffic on this show the way you do on Survivor or something. Like the four judge panelists can get it done. It's fine.
Yeah. And always the guest judges have watched like from the beginning, from like Wendy Pepper era.
Yeah.
Miss Your Est. So, you know, I don't think it needs it. And I especially don't think it needs, you know,
yeah,
a Vichy subject like Klaus.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And shout out to Taraji P. Henson from the third episode, who was especially fantastic as a judge. Yes, Dave.
Agree.
I haven't workshopped this completely yet, but something to do with the Addams Family and Lurch. And it's a spinoff show called You Meringue. And it's some sort of
And they
of
all
hybrid.
Have to be really tall.
Yeah.
I'm with it. Mm-hmm. For my plug, Quaid in Full. We are not having a Patreon drive at the moment, but we may. You should check it out. Patreon.com/Quaid in Full. Mm-hmm. This is a podcast in which Jeb Lund and I march through Dennis Quaid's CV in chronological order. The next episode, as you are listening to this, will drop tomorrow. Season 5, Episode 7, The Parent Trap, featuring our very own Tara Aranio.
Hello.
Yikes.
That was episode 1, featuring our very own David Dove T. Kale. So yes, that's Quaid in Full wherever you get your podcasts, and we would love to have you join us on Patreon, where you get extra pictures of Dennis Quaid's butt when available. Patreon.com/Quaid in Full.
All right, you may remember a few episodes ago, Tara went on a little rant about TV and holidays. You want to give a quick summary of that, Tara?
Yeah, once the holiday happens, you can't air your episode about said holiday.
Very good.
Motion seconded. Yep.
And that generated a lot of comments on social and on our Discord. So what I did is I created a TV holiday corridor committee in order to codify what exactly this should be. So the first job was for the committee to identify holidays which need to be corridorized because they have a significant amount of TV coverage surrounding them. So our candidates are the Valentine's Day corridor, mm-hmm. the Easter chocolate corridor.
Yep.
We had originally thought maybe the Memorial Day summer blockbuster Equinox corridor and what I was calling the America Minor Ordnance corridor. But I don't think there's enough programming for those two. So we struck those two.
Agree.
So after Easter, our next one is the Spooky corridor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then the Turkey corridor. Mm-hmm. The Christmas corridor, and then the New Year's corridor. The notable holidays not under consideration for a corridor, because that would be terrible, would be St. Patrick's Day and April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
We're not going to tempt fate by expanding those into a corridor. The general tenets for the corridor project are: corridors may not overlap. Corridors must end on the last day of the holiday. Mm-hmm. Corridors must have at least 2 fallow days between them in order for the nation to heal, and corridors to be at least a week, or else some releases like TV shows could miss the window through no fault of their own.
Right.
Now, that seems all neat and simple, but then we have to go to the carve-out subcommittee, and these are the exceptions to those general tenets as we work through each of them. The Spooky Corridor gets a carve-out to be expanded to the whole month of October, because October is the spooky month, but... Ugh. Double penalties for showing Halloween content in November.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to note that what sparked the initial rant was 9-1-1 having a Halloween-themed episode that was going to air on November 1st. And then they ended up pushing it down in the order. It aired on November 8th. Preposterous.
And this is why they would face double penalties.
What about from November 1 through 3 references in your episode to half-price candy? Take it to the committee. Let me know. No rush.
I mean, that is actually post-Halloween content.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because that refers to things that happen after Halloween. So I don't enjoy it, but I think technically it is legal. Now, moving on to the Turkey Corridor. The Turkey Corridor goes from the Monday before Thanksgiving to the following Monday. So it is 1 week. You can get all your Thanksgiving content in there. And we have the Hanukkah Corridor. And this has to start 1 week before the 25th of Kislev, and it will end on the last night of Hanukkah, and the Corridor Project will provide those dates on the Gregorian calendar to our valued TV partners. Now, it has a special carve-out because the Hanukkah Corridor is allowed to overlap with other corridors since...
It moves around.
Yes.
It's the Black Lodge of TV corridors.
It is the only corridor that is based on a lunisolar calendar. So it is allowed to overlap when it does naturally overlaps with the corridors. The Christmas Corridor. Because Santa arrives at the end of the Macy's Day Parade, the Christmas Corridor starts on Black Monday and gets a special allowance to run two extra days until December 27th. But any Christmas content that airs before December 1st may not make a joke or a serious complaint about Christmas season starting too early. The New Year's Corridor starts December 31st and ends January 1st, with special consideration given to best of and year in review programming, which may start on December 29th, but not show or talk about Times Square ball drop. Finally, we have one non-binding resolution, and that is the Corridor Project encourages shows no longer beholden to the September-May TV season to produce July 4th and other summer set episodes at will.
As the person who inspired all this, I just want to say, as far as I'm concerned, Halloween starts the day after Labor Day. And because I barely recognize Thanksgiving, Christmas starts November 1st.
Well, that's not the case. That's not what we found. Therefore, that can no longer be.
Overruled.
On the next Extra Extra Hot Great, we have power ranking the cast of Smash with Adam Grosser, who helped us out on that one. That is available to all supporters at any level. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to join up and support this podcast. And then right here on the next EHG Prime is Apple TV's The Shrink Next Door with good friend David J. Roth.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
Big Mouth has returned for its fifth season on Netflix, introducing some new human characters like Joel Kim Booster as Bridgerton classmate Charles Liu, and some new supernatural characters, love bugs, hate worms, a bigger role for Connie the Hormone Monstress's twin sister, Bonnie. At this point, I would say I admire the show's commitment to using body horror as an entry point for exploring puberty and sexuality more than I enjoy it most of the time. I might feel different if we hadn't watched so many episodes back to back, because after a while, it's like, how many jokes about semen can I actually... There's no good way to end that sentence. Take, absorb, both of those bad. Endure, anyway.
Swallow.
I also get that the animation format means the show can be more visually frank about its subject matter than a live-action show could, but I feel like earlier seasons showed us the characters' physiognomy less often so that when it did happen, it had more impact, whereas the Christmas episode of Season 5 promises to show us Santa's dick and then does quite graphically. Maybe I'm just getting prudish in my old age and or I'm at a point where the show is no longer for me, but all of that is beside the point of what I want to talk about today, which is I am not a crackpot. But Rick was funnier before Big Mouth started subtitling all of his speech. I know there are viewers, including ones who aren't hearing impaired, who have the captions on all the time, so this change wouldn't be something they even noticed when it happened. And I'm not trying to get into a whole thing about hearing privilege. I'm glad that Big Mouth is accessible to everyone at all levels of auditory
stuff. That should be the end of the semen sentence, too. Stuff.
But this is a rant for viewers like me and Dave, not to suggest he necessarily co-signs any of this, but we do watch TV together, who expect to see dialogue captioned only when it's translating a language other than English or when a speaker in a nonfiction show is truly unintelligible. Rick, who was originally Steve's hormone monster, is the one who is not doing well. His fur and skin are faded and dingy. His horn is limp. His left eye is sewn or swollen shut. He only has one foot and uses a crutch. He's incontinent. He also may have something wrong with his tongue, because this is how he talks. Clip.
Sir, I gotta tell you, based on your lack of alibi and your various connections to the victims, you are currently a person of interest.
So let me get this straight. You think that I am interesting and also a person?
You're a person, Steve. You have the right to remain awesome.
That was Rick at the end. Rick is a very good character and not deployed so excessively that the flavor he adds to the show gets diluted, cough, cough, Coach Steve, although they have pulled way back on Steve in Season 5. And the silly voice is a huge part of what makes Rick so funny, including that you often have to take a mental pause to work out what he actually just said. But in more recent seasons, the show has started subtitling all of Rick's dialogue, which means that an entire joke will appear on screen in caption text before Rick has delivered it. Big mouth, you're cutting Rick off at his existing remaining knee. Just let us barely understand 85% of what he's saying rather than spoil it. That's the joke. I also don't love that they subtitle the song lyrics now, but that's a rant for another day. I am not a crackpot.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. We will hear a pitch and we will decide if that episode of television needs to go in the canon or not. Presenting this week is Danny. Take it away, Danny.
Dave, Tara, and Sarah, I am here to put my perfect canon / no-knack submission record on the line and offer up Ted Lasso, Season 1, Episode 3, Trent Crim, The Independent, for consideration. Now, I appreciate that you may not have been aware of this show before I brought it to your attention. So for the benefit of your listeners, let me briefly sum it up. American football coach is hired to manage an English football team because the recently divorced owner wants to spite her ex-husband. So the first couple episodes of the first season spend time establishing that premise and making it clear that Ted is in way over his head. The team is losing. He knows barely anything about the sport. The players hate him. But episode 3 is where things start to turn around for both Ted Lasso, the character, and in my opinion, Ted Lasso, the show. So where we come in, the team's owner, Rebecca Welton, has arranged for what looks like salacious photographs of Ted with Keely Jones, who is the girlfriend of star player Jamie Tart, to appear in a newspaper in the hopes of enraging Jamie and sabotaging the team. But Keely has found out about the pictures, although not their source, and she comes to Ted in a panic in clip number 1.
This was going to be the front page of the Sun today. Manager shags star player's girlfriend.
Well, I think a more accurate headline would be manager innocently feeds young woman whose relationship does not define her.
Ted, this is really bad. So I look insanely fit in this picture.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful light.
My friend who works at the paper said he can hold this story for one day as a favor.
Mm-hmm.
When this shit hits, Jamie is going to go mental and it's going to be photographers all over us. The next picture of me will not be this perfect. I am going to be mid-sneeze face. Guess what the headline will be?
Gesundheit.
Jamie's top breaks Tart's heart.
Did you just come up with that?
Yeah.
Everyone would read that.
Of course they would. I mean, you have no idea the power of rhyming in this goddamn country.
So they turn to Rebecca herself for help, and she agrees to use her influence to help spike the photos, since she can't very well admit her involvement. But she craftily works it as a trade. In exchange for the photos being dropped, notably cynical journalist Trent Crim of The Independent will spend a day with Ted, and Rebecca assumes the resulting profile will expose Ted for the buffoon that he, let's be honest, sometimes comes across as. So the team isn't winning, and off the pitch, there are tensions within the team itself. Jamie Tart is a selfish superstar, which rubs crusty veteran Roy Kent the wrong way, especially when he notices that Jamie and the players who look up to him are being absolute dicks to Nate, the equipment manager. Roy goes to Ted about it, but Ted refuses to do anything about it, in the hope that Roy will take matters into his own hands. Roy does so, but realizes he's being played, and he's not happy about it, as he lets Keely know in clip number 2.
You look like you've forgotten something.
Hi, Keely. Looking for your prick boyfriend. You know how to pick him, don't you?
Didn't your last girlfriend, like, steal your Rolex and sell it for drug money?
So? I don't need a phone and a watch. Look, I didn't sign up to be your boyfriend's minder, okay? But the new gaffer's trying to make me feel responsible for fucking Nate, whose last name I don't even know.
It's Barnes.
No, it's Shelley.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like being tricked. Not by you, and not by, how do y'all cowboys? My name is Ted Lasso, and I'm from Kansas.
Wow. Oh, you're like really, really bad at impressions, man.
I know he's trying to push my buttons, but I cannot be manipulated.
Come on. I could push all of your buttons right now if I wanted to.
No, you couldn't actually, Keely.
I think actually
because,
I could.
No,
I
couldn't, Keely, because... No,
I can't,
Keely,
seem to hear
you. Actually, if you would listen to
I'm
me, just
to listen,
I could tell you why.
So tell me. Is that making you mad?
No.
No.
I'm Roy Kent, and I get paid to play a game, but I'm mad all the time.
That's actually pretty good.
So as the episode unfolds, Ted's sincerity forces Trent's heart to grow three sizes. Ted has given each of his players a book he hopes will impart some sort of lesson to them, sort of tactic that Phil Jackson of the Bulls is famous for. And he also visits a local elementary school where Kent, Roy Kent, a move Trent Crim thinks is happening purposely because he's there for the profile, but it's not. Ted doesn't have that kind of guile in him. It's not entirely a coincidence, though. Roy's niece goes to the school. Clip 3.
Boo-hoo. Roy, that was a blast. I'll tell you what, that niece of yours is a real cutie patootie.
Enough. I've had it with your mind games and your stupid gifts. I mean, what even is A Wrinkle in Time?
It's a lovely novel. It's the story of a young girl's struggle with the burden of leadership as she journeys through space.
Yeah, that's it.
Am I supposed to be the little girl?
I'd like you to be.
Right. None of this matters, because I'm just doing what everyone in this town is doing, and I'm counting down the days until you're gone. Trent, you're a colossal prick. You always have been. Phoebe, come on!
So Rebecca's goal was to have Trent realize, and write, that Ted is the wrong man for the job, and Ted is definitely the wrong man for this job. Certainly making the men on his team better people is a noble goal, and Ted is sincere about it, but this isn't a college team. This is a team of professionals. Wins and losses are extremely important, especially since too many of the latter means a team risks being relegated to a lesser division, which means a big financial hit. But Trent's day with Ted has convinced him that even if the hiring of Ted Lasso was a joke, Ted Lasso himself isn't joking. Rebecca's director of football operations, Leslie Higgins, a.k.a. Shithead, a.k.a. the only person who knows Rebecca is trying to ruin the team, has gotten the feature in advance of publication and reads it to Rebecca in our fourth and final clip.
And though I believe that Ted Lasso will fail here and Richmond will suffer the embarrassment of relegation, I won't gloat when it happens. Because I can't help but root for him.
Fuck!
So I know I've taken on the tough task of submitting this episode for the canon because Sarah can be comedy adverse, Tara's not big on sports, and Dave is decidedly unsentimental. By which I mean Dave has a fist where his heart should be.
Aww.
And I know that you guys came out early and hard against Ted Lasso and have stuck to your guns through the ensuing critical acclaim.
Let's put a pin in that because I don't think that's true. But okay, let's continue, Dan.
And the sort of rhetoric from fans can harden anybody's resolve against a piece of work. It's not surprising if you tell someone, Ted Lasso is not for me, you get told, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were literally Hitler. This could be another Rick and Morty for you folks in that it's hard to engage with the show on any level anymore. But I've selected the season one episode that I think sets the show on the path that will follow through this in the next season, where it starts being about what it's about. Empathy, sincerity, and decency. And please note, I have avoided using the K word that the most overzealous fans of the show will aggressively inform you that this is what the show is about.
Kerfuffling?
Kumquats?
Ketamine.
Yes! Finally, a show
for me. Oh, kumquats. That was another word you could have ended on earlier, Tara.
Mm-hmm. K-hole? Sure.
The show also plants and waters the seeds for new and changing relationships among several people, between Keeley and Rebecca, between Roy and Jamie, between Roy and Keeley, and even between Ted and Nate, making it absolutely critical for the series as a whole. I also believe the first season had a better handle than season two on how to balance the sincere with the snide, and this episode is a good example. If none of my other arguments sway you, let me say this. Tara, I will personally see to it that Jason Sudeikis dances at your funeral in a red tracksuit. I await the judgment of the three Trents Crim on this panel because this episode is like a small ball of tempered iron. It belongs in the canon.
All right. Well, why don't I go first since for all the reasons that Danny already said, and then Sarah can go in the middle and Dave can clean up. How about that?
Okay. But just so we're clear, Jason Sudeikis is his tracksuit guy at your funeral, and yes. At my funeral, he is crazy festival announcer guy.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And at mine, he's eating raisins. Tara, sure. Start us off.
I don't think we came out as Dave was. I'll just open the door for Dave to jump in on this. I don't think we came out like early and stuck to our guns. Like, I'm not mad at Ted Lasso. It truly is just, it's not for me. And it's gotten to the point where it's like, It's such a sensation that even just not watching it feels like you're just trying to be interesting, like, you know, abstaining from this thing that's such a cultural phenomenon.
Which... Not only do I not have a TV, my TV doesn't have Ted Lasso.
Exactly. Exactly. But it was funny to turn this on to watch this episode and be like, oh, this is exactly where we left off, because we watched the first two and it was already like set to play this one. My issue with the show is, like, I get why people like it. I really do. I understand that it's, like, it's comforting and relaxing to watch, and he's sweet, and he's such a goof, and Sudeikis is, like, very good at playing this character. I don't dispute any of that. I just, for me, it feels very calculated. Like, you can't... You know, it's like giving yourself a nickname, although I also have done that. But, like, you can't go into something like this and be like, we're the kindest show where everyone's nice, without making it seem like, you know, it's like it's been focus grouped. And, like, you know, how do we get people who don't watch this kind of show? We'll make it so sweet that we'll just, like, no one really has any hard edges, and whatever there is, they get sanded off and everyone ends up loving each other by the end. And especially with this episode, like, having the device of this hard-bitten, like, hard-ass journalist, and, like, even he likes Ted, you guys, so Ted is obviously great, feels very manipulative, and it's like, this, yeah, that's what happened in this episode, because you wrote it, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel organic to me. So this didn't really change my mind. And just to add a couple, the other detail where it's like, Ted is so great. When the headmaster at the school introduces him as Ed Lasso, and he never corrects him because Ted is so humble. It's like, I fucking get it. I do think Hannah Waddington is great. She has amazing guns. I like what Juno Temple is doing with this performance, too. It was fun to tell Dave about the Brett Goldstein is not a person, he is just CG theory that the internet adopted this year.
But, he's from GoldenEye.
But this did not work on me. Sarah.
I have avoided Ted Lasso because I just feel like, based on the discourse and what Tara said before, which is like, either you love it or you're like performatively not watching it. And I just, like, my thing with it was like, based on what people I know well are saying about how much and the ways in which they like it, I am going to feel bad about myself and my relationships for not liking it. I'd rather not know. Ignorance is bliss.
Ted Lasso will tell you exactly what type of monster you are.
He probably will, in a very cornpone way involving a Butterfinger rapper and a childhood poo incident. But I laughed at that and at a bunch of other things. And, like, here's the thing. Tara is absolutely right that this is calculated, but I don't always think that being manipulated and knowing you're being manipulated is bad. Like, there were so many episodes of Friday Night Lights where I was like, arms crossed, like, still crying. And it's like, you can see them doing it, but you don't care because it's so sort of well done and so well intentioned. I don't think that this rises to that level. But I did feel myself being kind of won over to certain parts of it that were ironically the most sort of fakey seeming, like, you know, Roy and Keeley, like, okay, where could this possibly be going?
Right.
But on the other hand, there were a couple of scenes that didn't go, that went in a direction that I didn't expect. So this was an entertaining episode. I was like, oh, this is what Ted Lasso is. I didn't feel like it was, you know, snow cone syrup curdling like I thought I might feel. And Sudeikis has this, like, Roy Williams energy to him that I didn't hate, because, you know, Roy, we miss him. He's alive, but we miss him. There were a lot of things to like about this, but then when the episode ended, I was like, I feel like I know what's going to happen next and I don't have to keep watching.
Oh no.
Unless Dave, like, bursts into flower-shaped tears right now and talks to, like, voting this in, I'm probably going to vote no. But let's see what that old sap has to say, Dave.
Let's find out together.
Oh, buddy.
I just want to say at the start that my original take on Ted Lasso is I wished it was sort of more acidic. And I'm with Sarah. I don't really care if a show is manufactured to engineer a certain reaction from you, because that's writing.
That's Yeah.
But I understand that this one feels more on a track than most. You can see where the train is coming from and where it's going to. For me, this episode did not change my opinion of Ted Lasso at all, which is, it's a perfectly cromulent show that I feel like is like a B program that hit at exactly the right time in human history to get
that's a very good point.
Bump. And I'm going to get letters about two things I said in this episode. One, I don't like Ted Lasso enough. Two, saying that Yellowstone turns you older. I know somebody's mad at that already. They've already written it and sent it, and now they're hearing this and they're like, oh shit, I'm that person. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed we're
going to
get
Kyle,
one of those.
He's 52 years old. I'll bet you a dollar right now.
So let's put this to the vote. I got a good feeling
No, it's not too good.
Tara Ariano, what say you?
It's a no for me, but I will let people know if they didn't already that another show Jason Sudeikis was involved with called Detroiters is now on Paramount Plus. So if you're more in the Dave and me camp, and I'll also just say for people who are like, they just hate nice shows, they also don't like Schitt's Creek. That's true. But we also like Rose Haven, which is really, really a nice show and much funnier in my opinion. So it's a no for me. Thank you, Danny.
Sarah DeBendick.
I respect your courage in presenting this, knowing that we all hate Joy and are broadcasting each of us from chambers of little ease. Just kidding. We're not. And I'm glad I did interact with it. So thank you for that. But it is still a no for me.
I've been infected by the fever of Ted Lasso and the kindness he brings. I'm saying it's going out, but it doesn't matter. So unfortunately.
Fuck you, Dave. God that damn means. It. Sold out again.
That Ted Lasso, by a vote of 2-1, monsters versus kind-hearted people is what we're seeing here.
Cock.
Season 1, Episode 3, Trent Crim, the Independent, a man with fantastic hair, by the way.
He does.
You are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
But through no fault of Dave's.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah. Why'd I come back here?
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
You guys are genuinely mad at that.
I love
this is
when
a weird
Sarah
tone.
Gets fake mad about something inconsequential. It truly is indistinguishable from when she's mad for real.
Let's talk about our winner and loser of the week. Who has this week's winner?
Well, there are a few shows that premiered on Fox this year that improbably I ended up really liking. I mean, speaking of being calculated, Fantasy Island, actually all of these shows, frankly. But while The Big Leap and Our Kind of People look like they are not going to return from their current very short seasons, Fantasy Island's renewed for season 2. Hooray! And there's also, I discovered today, there's going to be a Christmas special on December 21st, like a 2-hour Fantasy Island movie, which I'm very excited for. This show is 100% my new royal pains, with all that that implies.
And loser of the week?
Speaking of royal pains, it's Dave. Just kidding. Actually, it is something called an Ingo Rademacher.
Oh, boy. Like from Chernobyl?
Yes. I
don't go over 34 Rademachers.
Rademachers.
That's too many Rademachers.
Mm-hmm. The inventor of the Rademacher scale has been fired from General Hospital for being anti-vaccine and a transphobe. And apparently, fellow anti-vax dingus Steve Burton, who was a January 1989 sassy one to watch, is also on his way out. So really, General Hospital is a winner for believing in science. People, just get the fucking shot.
Yeah.
Speaking about getting the fucking shot, do you know what time it is?
Time to fire Dave!
Good time!
Before we start game time, we have to visit the corrections department from last week's game. This is on me, just but bad time management. You know, I was doing extra work while Sarah was gone. I'm not excusing it. I'm just explaining it. A couple errors in the game. A couple shows actually had more than one season, so they're actually two season wonders, those being True Calling and Life Unexpected, because it's got a capital X, were the incorrect shows that probably shouldn't have been in that game. So mea culpa on that. All right. This is the second game time of the season. Our scores are Sarity Bunting with one, everybody else looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Dead, Simpsons, Both, Neither, Part One from Brendan Brazeau, the Brazier, the Baffler, who earns himself an extra credit topic. He writes, over 33 seasons, there have been lots of guest star voices on The Simpsons. 913, to be exact, Christ. As of October 24th, 2021. In this game time, we have a simple task for you. We are going to mention a guest star. It is your job to tell us if they are dead, a Simpsons guest star, both, or neither. So dead, Simpsons star, both, neither is going to be one of your answers for each of them. Now, a little information on guest star status. They have to have a speaking part and just not be shown on screen. Also, archival footage does not count. I'm not sure what that is in reference to, but it seems very, very pointed. So I'm sure that's important. For example, if I bummed you out by asking about the status of Phil Hartman, your answer would be what?
Simpsons. Both.
He is both a Simpsons guest star and he is no longer with us. So the answer there would be both. Steel meal situation, please, Tara Ariana.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has one. I have 10. Valued guests have 3 plus Eric's point. And there are 4 steel meals that Dave won in a previous game that he has yet to assign.
All right. Once again, we're going to work on this until you get it right. It's Eric's meal.
Eric's meal. Sorry.
Okay, here we go. Let's sort of pick and see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Danny is going first, followed by Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play? Dead, Simpsons, both, neither.
Ready.
Yes.
Part one. Here we go. We've broken it up into rounds. This is round one called Magical Mystery Tour. Dan, George Harrison, is he dead, Simpsons, both, or neither? Feel free to talk it out. Or just stand there in stony silence.
The notably
Danny
visual medium.
Danny is dead.
Well, Simpsons. I know he's not dead, so it's not both. And I'm trying to think of a voice that he would have done. I'm not coming up with it, so I'm going to say neither. Neither's my answer.
Steel meal. I'm going to take it, just on principle. Both.
It is both. He is dead. He died in 2001, Dan.
Yeah.
Now you miss him. And he was in Homer's Barber Shop Quartet as himself at the end of the episode.
What name did you say?
George Harrison.
George Harrison. He's one of the Beatles. Beatles.
Okay. Do you think we meant George Hamilton?
No, I was thinking of George Clooney. Yes.
Magical Mystery Tour. Dear. George Clooney. It's all falling. Yes. Into. Sarah D. Bunting. Paul McCartney.
Ocean 7. Okay. Paul McCartney. As of this writing, not dead. I am very confident he was on The Simpsons. I'm going to say Simpsons.
Simpsons guest star is Sarah's answer, and that is correct. Tara.
Yeah.
John Lennon. Dead, Simpsons guest star, both, neither.
Dead. We miss him.
Yeah, we do miss him, don't we?
Do we?
Well, no.
More for you.
He was a bad guy.
Dead is correct. Dead since 80. Back to Dan. Yoko Ono. Are they dead? Were they a Simpsons guest star? Were they both of those things or neither of those things?
Yoko is alive, but I don't believe she's been a Simpsons guest star. So that means she is neither dead nor a Simpsons guest star. So I'm going to say neither.
You are correct. Sarah D. Bunting, Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr. Oh, well, Ringo's dead. Ringo, Simpsons.
Perfect. He played himself on Brush with Greatness.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yes.
Wrapping up round one, Linda McCartney.
Both.
She is dead and was on The Simpsons. You are correct. That was Lisa the Vegetarian. She died in 98. All right, it is time for round two, Star Trekking Across the Universe. Dan, Rene Auberginois. Odo.
Yeah, I never watched Star Trek, but I know who the character is. Yes. I believe he did guest star in The Simpsons, and I think he also died. That's both.
Your answer is both, and you are incorrect. He was not on The Simpsons.
Is he dead?
Yeah, he's dead. Going to Sarah D. Bunting, George Takei. Sarah D. Bunting.
Simpsons.
Simpsons is the correct answer. Yes. He played Akira on One Fish, Two Fish, Blow Fish, Blue Fish.
Sure.
He did not appear in the monorail episode due to his position on the transit committee in San Francisco. Little nugget for you. Oh. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Bakula. Blah.
I'm going to guess Simpsons.
You are correct. He is still alive, and he was in Bobby It's Cold Outside.
Okay.
Dan, Kate Mulgrew. Dead? Simpsons? Both of those or neither of those?
Simpsons.
Simpsons is incorrect. She is alive, has not been on the show. The answer there, neither. Sarah D. Bunting, Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart is, I hope, still with us and has to have been on The Simpsons. So I will say Simpsons.
You are correct. He was in the Stonecutters episode.
Great episode.
Homer the Great, that episode is called.
And in honor of Sarah, we're having ribs.
Tara.
Yep.
Nichelle Nichols.
Well, I know she did Futurama, but that's not what we're talking about. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say neither.
She is still with us at the age of 88, but she was on the episode Simple Simpson. So the answer there is Simpsons guest star. Everybody's last Star Trek question. Dan,
yes,
Avery Brooks.
I think Avery Brooks is still with us, but I don't think he's done a... Or has he? I'm going to say Simpsons.
Should have went with your first thought. It is neither. He is 73, but has not been on The Simpsons. Sarah D. Bunting, Walter Koenig.
Walter Koenig. I don't know if he was on or has been on The Simpsons, and I actually don't know if he's alive.
No, let's roll the dice.
I know. What could it be? I think he's just dead.
He is neither. He is alive at the age of 85, but he has not been on The Simpsons. He has, however, been on Futurama.
Okay, well, good for him.
Our last actor for our Star Trek round for Tar before we go into our score break is Leonard Nimoy.
Both.
He is both. Yeah. Yes, he is no longer
there
with us.
Is.
And he was on the famous Marge versus the Monorail episode.
We miss him.
So we do miss him. All right, scores, please, Tara.
Well, it's a very close game in some respects. I have 5 points. Sarah has 4 points. Danny's on the board with one.
All right, let's get back to it with round three. Maggie Maybe. Dan, James Earl Jones.
Well, definitely Simpsons. James Earl Jones still with us? I'm going to say both.
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
He is still with us at the age of 90.
I thought he died too.
No, he's still with us. All right, this is question 17.
The Spread Eagle.
The Spread Eagle.
Or Sarah, Jane Fonda. Jane Fonda dead? Was she a Simpsons guest star? Maybe both those things or neither of those things.
I'm pretty sure she's not dead. I believe she was a Simpsons guest star. I will say Simpsons.
Not on The Simpsons.
That
she
been
is
my guess
still
too.
With us at 83, though. Tara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carol Kane.
Simpsons. Why not?
Correct. Maggie Simpson on Bart versus Thanksgiving. Dan. Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster is definitely not dead. I'm going to say Simpsons.
You are correct. And she also played Maggie Simpson on Four Great Women and a Manicure. Sarah D. Bunting, Elizabeth Taylor.
Both.
Both is correct. She played Maggie Simpson and was on Lisa's First Word, saying Lisa's First Word. Wrapping up our Maggie Maybe, Sybil Shepherd for Tara.
Oh, I think neither.
You are correct.
Nicely
71,
done.
71, not on The Simpsons. All those people voiced or didn't voice Maggie Simpson. All right. Round four is, how about we play the basketball? I'm no Harvey Globetrotter, but...
You're ready for the Shaq attack.
To Dan. Magic Johnson. Dead star, both neither.
He did a voice early on when Homer saved the power plant, and he is still with us. Simpsons.
Correct. Homer nice. Defined the Pulling a Homer episode,
mm-hmm.
and he is 62. Sarah Bunting, Larry Bird.
I mean, alive, but did he Simpsons? I don't know. I would like to think he did, but I don't think he did. So that means neither.
Yes, absolutely correct. He is 64.
Yes.
LeBron James.
LeBron. He's probably done it.
We miss him.
He's,
didn't you
I
hear
assume
the news?
He's done a later year Simpsons, probably.
Correct. Yes, he's only 36. Back to Dan. Scottie Pippen. Dead. Did a voice on The Simpsons. Both those things. Neither of those things.
Neither of those things.
Yes, correct. Back to Sarah. Wilt Chamberlain.
The Stilt. Sybil. But was he a Simpsons voice? I feel like he was. I'm going to say both.
He's just dead.
Just dead?
Just dead. He died in 99. Tara.
Yeah.
Shaquille O'Neal.
I mean, he might have done one in the later era, too. So I'll just say Simpsons.
Correct. He was on an episode called Gone one. Boy, and he is 49.
Mm. All right. Just like you, Dave.
Just like me.
Equally as
Dave.
Successful,
yes,
the two of
yes.
you.
Yes, I also like to get my car insurance from the general. All right. Dan. Yao is Ming.
Both. Wait. Sorry, I got to check the chart. No, he did a voice, but he's still with us. Simpsons.
I told him earlier to write down the chart because he's having a little trouble
it's
with
so
it
hard.
Earlier. Oh, he did. Oh, okay. All right. Yes, correct. He is 41 still, and he was in Homer and Ned's Hail Mary Pass.
Oh, right. That was even when we were still watching yeah. somehow.
Sarah.
There's a bunch of athletes on that one.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Aw.
Aw.
It's nice and picky.
The Skyhook. Not dead. I mean, he has to have, right? Simpsons.
Correct. He is 74, and he was on Love is a Many Strangled Thing. All right, last question of this round. It is for Tara. Michael Jordan.
Oh, probably. Simpsons.
Neither. Oh. He is 58, sitting at home with his Hitler mustache, but he has
yeah,
not
he
been
does
on the
seem
Simpsons.
Like the kind of non-participating dick who'd be like, nah. Yeah.
All right, let's get the scores now. We're two-thirds the way through.
All right. I have 9 points. Sarah has 7 points. Danny has 5 points.
All right. Let's get back into it with round five. Persons who are famous for combining heat and ingredients in various ways.
Okay.
Danny. Jamie Oliver. Is he dead? Has he been on The Simpsons? Perhaps both of those things or neither of those things.
He is still alive. I believe he's been on The Simpsons. So Simpsons.
He has not been on The Simpsons.
Really?
The answer
I thought
was
he did
neither.
Too. Hmm.
Yes, he is 46, still with us. Sarah Debunting, Bobby Flay.
Not dead. I don't think he was on The Simpsons, so neither.
You are correct. Tara.
Yeah.
Wolfgang Puck.
Simpsons.
Simpsons, yes. The Bart wants what it wants, and he is 72.
Oh, puppy.
Back to Dan. Gordon Ramsay.
Not dead. Definitely has been on The Simpsons. Simpsons.
Correct. He was on The Food Wife. Back to Sarah. Julia Child.
Dead.
Yes. Just dead. 2004.
Dead.
Tar.
Yeah.
Anthony Bourdain.
Both.
Correct. He was also Aww. On The Food Wife, and he died in 2018.
I mean, we've been saying it a lot, but we actually do miss, him.
Miss him.
Yeah, I know.
All right, last question in this round for each of you. Rachel Ray for Dan.
Rachel Ray, still with us. We miss her.
No, we don't. That'd be a little...
I don't know that she's on a voice. I am going to say neither.
Yes, correct. Wow, she is 53. Sarah, Emeril Lagasse. Bam.
Bam. Well, not dead. He seems like the kind of guy who would want to do a Simpsons, but they'd be like, blech. But I think he did a Simpsons, so Simpsons.
Should have went with neither.
I would have thought that too.
Yeah.
I would have thought Rachel Ray also, frankly.
He's 62, but not on the Simpsons, unfortunately. All right,
not in the good way.
Last chef for you, Tara, yeah. Guy Fieri.
Oh, Simpsons.
Neither. Last questions for all of you were neither.
Wow.
He is still alive, but has not been on The Simpsons. And last round coming at you.
Okay.
It is called Challenging the Norm.
Okay.
Dan, George Wendt.
George Wendt still alive, was on The Simpsons, so Simpsons.
Yes, he was on Fear of Flying. He is 73. Sarah D. Bunting, Ted Danson.
Neither?
He was also in that episode.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he was also in Fear of Flying. He is also 73. Tara, John Ratzenberger.
I think he was also in that episode, so I'm going to say Simpsons.
You are correct on both those accounts. He's a year older than the other two guys. He is 74. Back to Dan. Rhea Perlman?
She was also on that episode. But is she still... Yeah, like I think she recently divorced Danny DeVito, so Simpsons.
I think they ended up staying together, but yes.
Well, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so far, all of those have been on the same episode called Fear of Flying. Sarah D. Bunting, Kirstie Alley.
Not dead. Don't miss her. I don't know, so I'm gonna say Simpsons.
Neither. Not on The Simpsons. Tara.
Yeah.
B.B. Newirth.
Neither.
Correct.
Nice.
Dan. Nicholas Colasanto.
Oh, he died before Simpsons even was a thing. So dead.
He is dead. Dead in 85. Yes, well before The Simpsons debuted. Sarah. Shelley Long.
Simpsons.
Hi, Mo. Where's that waitress of yours?
Oh, she left to pursue a movie career. Frankly, I think she was better off here.
Neither. Did not provide a voice on The Simpsons. Mm. Last question of regulation for Tara. Your actor is Woody Harrelson.
Simpsons.
Yes, also on that same episode, nice. Fear of Flying, we had George Wendt, Ted Danson, John Ratzenberg, Rhea Perlman, and Woody Harrelson from Cheers. And that is regulation. Tara, final scores, please.
Fun fact, Frasier also appears drawn in that episode, but he does not speak because he's already Sideshow Bob. Everyone finished strong in this game. Sarah ended with 9. Danny had 10. I have 14.
All right, woo! Tara takes today. I have tiebreakers, and I have one for each of you, so you woo! Individually get to play for a steel meal.
Fun.
Okay.
Dan.
Yes, sir.
This is I Can Feel Prog Rock Coming in the Air Tonight. Oh, Lord. Your person is Phil Collins. Is he dead? Has he been on The Simpsons? Both those things or neither of those things?
Neither of those things.
Neither of those things is correct.
Good job.
He is still with us. Touring at the age of 70.
And buying Jack Six.
Buying Alamo shit.
That's right.
What a weirdo.
Yes, and he is also a soldier who fought in the Battle of the Alamo. All right. Sarah, I'm not quite sure I agree with this definition of prog rock, but it doesn't really matter. Frank Zappa. It's a very generous, incorrect.
Yeah.
He's not prog rock.
Right.
He's for sure dead, though. The question is whether he was on a Simpsons, and I'm pretty sure he was, so I'm going to say both.
No! Just dead, 93. Been. He was supposed to have a guest spot, but died before it could happen.
Oh, man! They can't get half a steel meal off that?
Yes, you can. You can ask for a steel meal, but you can't participate
and
in
not
it.
Not get it? Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Tara.
Yeah.
Peter Gabriel. Rounding out our Genesis lead vocal category.
Oh, no. I don't even remember if he's alive. Shit. Ah! Neither.
Neither is, in fact, the correct answer. He is alive. Nice. He is 71, but has not been on The Simpsons. All right, that is it. Congratulations, Tara.
Yeah, Tara.
Tara. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of this podcast, which is called Extra Hot Great. We studied hard to get to Head of the Class before going around the dial with stops at Frayed, Married at First Sight, Deutschland 89, The Great British Baking Show Bake Off, whatever you want to call it, Project Runway, and the Holiday Corridor Committee findings. Tara explained why she is not a crackpot for suggesting Rick and subtitles never should have met. Dan's cannon pitch for Ted Lasso couldn't get out of the regional feeder league. I looked it up. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from the Bazaar. Next up, it is Smash Power Rankings on Extra Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, The Shrink Next Door. Remember,
listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
dead
Sarah D. Bunting,
is my tongue still in my mouth?
And Daniel McKechard,
Ted Lasso is a show about kindness, you assholes.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on the Kindness Podcast. You can find Extra Hot Great.
It's, you know what? It's not very good. It's probably really bad. You know what? It's embarrassing even.
Sorry, Nate. I have a real tricky time hearing folks that don't believe in themselves.
You have the right to remain awesome.
Fuck you, Dave.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.